on 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for keeping us entertained this afternoon. It's Tuesday the 29th of March and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, a feast of association football as the boys in green take on Lithuania. And in Sweden, our under-21s have started brightly in their Euros qualifier.
Coventry, Kilkenny.
Oh, goal! Ross Turney hammers it to the net. And a small contingent of Irish supporters can celebrate. Oh, what a tonic that is. We'll also have Mark Langdon along to set us up for tonight's playoffs as North Macedonia aim to pick up against Portugal, where they left off against Italy.
Almost looking hopeful here. But North Macedonia going for it all! Would you believe it? Would you believe it? In added time, North Macedonia has shocked Italy. Milevski celebrates. Mancini cannot believe it.
Plus in rugby, our Irish women's team faced the media a little bit earlier on today. And in golf, Greg Allen will introduce us to the new world number one.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. Shane Dawson here. You're listening to Game On. It is great to have your company wherever in the world you are tuning in from, and I'm delighted to be in the company live in studio with Paul Corry, and we'll be joining Tony O'Donoghue live from the Aviva Stadium very shortly. But before we chat football, Paul, a couple of news headlines just to get through. Waterford GAA have decided not to appeal Austin Gleeson's sending off against Wexford last Sunday. The county board will not be taking the matter any further, and so that means the in-form Gleeson, who scored 2-3 before being sent off against Wexford, will miss this weekend's Allianz Hurling League final against Cork. In rugby, Damien De Allende has confirmed he will leave Munster at the end of the season, with his next club set to be outside Europe. He categorically ruled out following his Munster coach Johan van Graan to Bath. Confirmation of his departure had been expected, with the province previously announcing the signing of former All Black centre Malachy Fekitoa as their non-Irish qualified midfielder for next season. Munster welcome Leinster, of course, to Thomond Park in the URC on Saturday evening. But Paul Corry, you are currently keeping an eye on, as well as chatting to myself and the many listeners tuning in, on the Ireland under-21s, who are currently leading Sweden 1-0. The second half has just kicked off. We heard the audio there from Ross Turney. The match is currently live on RT2 television. A great finish from Ross Turney.
Yeah, an ideal start for Jim Crawford's side. We went into the game, Shane, 4 points behind Sweden, who are in second position, which would, qualify for the qualifiers, or sorry, for the, you know, get us a playoff spot.
Yep.
A dream start. Fantastic finish by Ross Tierney. It was really good link-up play with Ollie O'Neill down the right-hand side. The ball went into the box. It was kind of a half clearance from Sweden, and Ross Tierney caught on the half volley. Great finish to put Ireland 1-0 ahead. And to be honest with you, they haven't really come under threat too much by Sweden. Sweden have had, by and large, the majority of the possession in that first half without really hurting Ireland. Ireland have set up with a 3-5-2, and the three centre halves of McGuinness, O'Brien and McEntee haven't really been troubled. And Brian Maher has looked sensational in goals. You know, he hasn't had to do an awful lot. He had one big save that he pulled off, but his general organisation, his hands, he's very good with his feet. He's looked in complete control. So a dream start for Jim Crawford. I guess the one worry you would have, Shane, is that we sit on what we have and we drop deeper and deeper, and that can be tiring both physically and mentally. So what you'd be looking for is the likes of Kilkenny and Coventry, two of the more experienced players in that squad, to really get a grip of it, and when we have got possession, to try keep it for a bit and take the legs away from Sweden and just buy ourselves a bit of a breather. But from what we've seen in the first half, a superb finish by Ross Tierney, and a really good composure from Jim Crawford's side to see out that first half, and hopefully at 3 points here puts us in pole position to get that playoff spot.
Yeah, absolutely. The bit of context, I suppose, around it. So a win would take them to within a point of Sweden with a game in hand. Second place, Italy, are level with the Swedes on 14 points after a surprise 1-1 draw in Montenegro on Friday, which, as you say, has blown the group wide open, which is great to see. Ireland have never qualified for the finals and endured a series of near misses. And Jim Crawford knows how fine the margins are between success and failure, and that can be seen. His side lost 2-0 to Italy in November before Ollie O'Neill's stoppage time winner against Sweden. Ireland, of course, won 1-0. nil in Dublin, and now hopefully they're on the path of getting another victory. But, you know, a quote that really struck me beforehand, Paul, was from Jim Crawford, and he said, this under-21s team, yes, it's about development, but how you develop is learning from adversity, learning from mistakes, and kick on as individuals and as a team, hopefully to qualify for the European finals. And just judging it on 45 minutes of football that we've just watched here on the TV, I mean, you can see that there is maturity, and hopefully in the second half there is composure to see it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the players that I mentioned previously, like Kilkenny, Coventry, Leo Connor, players that were involved in Stephen Kenny's under 21 side are probably the ones that you look towards in moments like this in order to just gather the rest of the players and keep our structures good and just manage the game as best as possible. But you're right, and anytime you look at a 21s team, listen, not everybody is going to make that progression through to first team football and then onto the senior squad. You are looking at a couple of players who will eventually make that step up, and the way you make that step up is by progressing in your career. And this is an unbelievable opportunity for this 21 squad to go to a major tournament. Like you mentioned, we have never done that before. There are tough fixtures to come. You know, we'd play Bosnia at home. They beat Bosnia earlier on in the campaign. We were beaten by Montenegro, but we play them at home again. So if we could see through this result, it puts us in prime position for that playoffs spot. But I mean, if we're looking at the senior squad or we're looking at the 21s, the way we're playing, the progressive football, mixing it up, playing to feet and playing out from the back, but the odd time using the likes of O'Neill and Tierney, who've got good legs to hurt teams, that's exactly what I want to see. And it's the majority of Irish fans want to see, is just a bit of variety in our play and not always relying on set pieces, being good from open play and using the ball positively. And I think we're doing that, and that's a consistency that we're seeing from the top down and from the bottom up in Irish football. And that's all we ask for, and we look for our players to progress, and we look for the right structures and the right coaching to be put around them. And to top that all off, you need positive results, and if we can hold on to that result against Sweden, beat them home and away, that would be serious progression.
Absolutely, and there are some big names throughout the underage grades. Just to run down a couple of results, there was disappointment for the Ireland under-17s. The men's side drew 2-2 with Bulgaria and Portugal. Goals from Rocco Vatta and Sam Curtis were only enough to earn a point after trailing 2-0 at half time, so their qualification dreams are gone. Likewise, the women's under-17s, they were defeated 4-1 in Tala against Iceland, having drawn with Slovakia and lost to Finland. James Scott's team needed to win their final game and hope that Slovakia overcame Finland. Neither of those outcomes came true. While Finland coasted to a 4-0 victory in the UCD Bowl, Iceland proved too strong for the host of Tala Stadium and in the process topped Group A. One bit of positivity, Shelburne's Abby Larkin got the Ireland goal, a young player with a bright future who we might see in Vera Powell's senior squad for their World Cup qualifier trip to Sweden that is due to be announced on Thursday morning. The men's under 19 side will play Armenia in St. George's Park this evening with a 7:30 kickoff. But if we're to come full circle, Paul, and head back to the senior team, and if we welcome RT Soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue into the conversation, because he is live at the Aviva Stadium. And Tony, we talk about positivity throughout the ranks, and there certainly seems to be a lot of positivity surrounding the senior side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? You were talking about the 21s. In the programme, the CEO of the FAI, Jonathan Hill, spoke about actually going to the under-21s hotel during the week as they prepared for the away match in Sweden. And he was just making the point that he believes the talent in that room was incredible. And then thought about Euro 2028, and he was saying that it would be mostly those guys would be, you know, that's the prospect, that's the carrot for them to get involved at senior international level, and then linking it all up with the you know, strong possibility that this stadium here, the Aviva, could host games in the European Championship Finals in 2028. It's not that far away, only 6 years. And when you look at the likes of Troy Parrott in the senior side, only just turned 20 last month, and he could easily be in Sweden knocking them in. But it's great to see. I saw that Ross Tierney goal, and yeah, he definitely has a striker's instinct the way he gobbled up that chance. So yeah, looking to the future with confidence, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. A real natural finish as well. There are 54 minutes gone in the under-21 match. As I say, we'll keep you updated on that. It is currently 1-0 to Ireland. But Tony, you mentioned, I suppose, some of the younger guys coming through. There was disappointing news for Conor Ronan, Jimmy Dunn. They haven't made the match day squad. Now, we don't have any team news for the senior match as of yet, but Stephen Kenny has remained with the same match day squad, and he is likely to make a couple of changes. So as I say, at the moment we're just speculating, but we're hoping to see some of the young guys get a bit of game time this evening.
Yeah, it's, believe it or not, 1 hour, 31 minutes and 20 seconds to kick off the countdown clock is telling me that. And usually you get the team 75 minutes before kickoff, maybe a little bit before that. We might be able to bring it to you in the next while. But, you know, Keith Andrews was standing in for Stephen Kenny in the pre-match press conference yesterday, and he made the point that, you know, they don't want to give out cheap caps, you know. Having said that, you know, the last few caps that Troy Parrott earned was coming on as a late substitute, but they don't want to give them out cheaply, and they don't want to, you know, halt the momentum of this side too much either. Yes, you want to give chances to new players, but you also want to keep that momentum. I mean, you know, it was a draw in a friendly that felt almost like a competitive win. The atmosphere, 48,808 people. I mean, Roberto Martinez, the Belgian manager, remarked on that as well. You know, it was a full-hearted game and a good test for the Republic of Ireland. And they played to the end and absolutely deserved the draw in the end. No question about that, albeit in a slightly understrength Belgium side. So they'll want to continue with that, because after tonight, we've nothing until June and the Nations League games, and we don't know yet how they'll go. The Ukrainian ambassador to Ireland, Larissa Gerashko, is the special guest here this evening, and there will be a moment's applause just ahead of kickoff, you know, in solidarity with the people of Ukraine. So we don't know what's going to happen in terms of who we play, but there will be games in June. But how we sign off on this particular international window will kind of set the tone and the mood for how we play in June.
Yeah, certainly will. Paul, before I ask you a question on the senior side, Ireland nearly went 2-0.
Yeah, nearly. It was a bit of a mistake or a bit of a mix-up in the Swedish back four, but playing well on the counter-attack. It was a good ball in behind by Ross Tierney, and, you know, there was just a bit of confusion between the Swedish centre-half and goalkeeper that nearly resulted in OG, but probably exactly what you want to be seeing. Otto Beck, who's up top, he's got good legs as well. Big man, feed him and try... you know, join in from there. So yeah, listen, if we can feed into that final third, turn the Swedish back four, back five, you can definitely cause them some problems. But yeah, almost a bit of a mess up there from the Swedes to put ourselves 2-0.
Should we be expecting Ireland to cause Lithuania some problems this evening? Because Tony O'Donoghue mentioned the word momentum there, and I suppose all the news articles this week where there's a fine balance between moral victories and, you know, wanting to get actual wins, but we have an opportunity to go 8 games unbeaten. But in theory, I don't want to say must win, but it's a game that we should be expecting with respect to Lithuania. It's a game that we should be coming away with a positive result.
Yeah, expectancy is probably the key word there. I think everybody's expecting us to win and expecting us to put in a good performance. It's not a case of hope, and I think Tony made a really good point there. Our next game is until June. I don't think we can afford to chop and change 11 players. We can't get complacent with the fact that we've had a couple of good results and we've had a couple of good performances. I think striking up relationships is key in the way we play, whether that's between the back three and the four or five in front with our wing backs. I think it's important that we keep the majority and the core of the squad together tonight. I would only be looking to make 2, 3, 4 changes at a max, and try blend the players and the good play that we've had in previous games, the likes of Robinson, Obegny and Knight. I wouldn't change. I think the likes of Seamus Coleman and Duffy, you could maybe rest with the likes of Nathan Collins and Daryl Shea potentially coming in. And outside of that, maybe Jeff Hendrick coming out and Conor Herring coming in, and just keep the group tight. Don't throw away and be handing people caps for the sake of handing them caps. We need to have consistency in our performances and also in our selection. And I think from there you can look to build blood in 2-3 new faces and continue with that momentum, continue with the positivity of good results, and hopefully that leads us in good stead to the Nations League campaign.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what changes that will be made. And I mentioned no Conor Ronan, no Jimmy Dunn in the matchday squad. And Irish Independent journalist Sam MacDonald made a very good point actually on Twitter a bit earlier on that it does follow the Stephen Kenny pattern since last summer. Players seemingly don't see much action in their first camp. Chidozie Ogbene only got a few minutes in Hungary. Jamie McGrath was sprung late from the bench in Andorra. Will Keane was an unused substitute in October before getting his cameo in November. Kenny's seemingly adopting a route of planned steady integration now rather than just throwing them in straight up. So if we do see a couple of changes, be it Nathan Collins in defence, perhaps Will Keane, even if you mightn't like to see it, Paul, who has been around camps without seeing too many minutes, I suppose that would be what we've seen in the past from Stephen Kenny, perhaps a longer run for Alan Brown and Mark Sykes. If he does see some game time, I suppose he's ahead of the curve. And Tony, a lot of the feelings and the sentiments coming out in the quotes is, I think Jason Knight was mentioning it as well, John Egan, when he was up doing media, was that the bad times and the dark times, and Keith Andrews commented on it as well when Stephen Kenny and the management team were under pressure, and I think back to that Luxembourg result, but it seems to have unified the group and brought them together. Do you feel that when you're out, when you're chatting to the players, because you're there and you're talking to them face to face, like this isn't just throwaway comments, you know, trying to appease the media or appease the public?
You know, all the players, well, as you see, press conference situations are a little strange, because if you put someone up before the media, they're hardly likely to throw shade at the management, you know. I mean, you're going to get positivity from those sort of stilted, occasions. But having said that, when you speak to players outside of those situations, they were always behind Kenny. I think the noise around the Stephen Kenny situation came from the fact that there was cold feet, perhaps, or certain misgivings among certain members of the FAI board when the results weren't going well, you know, to commit to another campaign and beyond when the results weren't going well. That was something that they were concerned about. So, you know, the results changed and the temperature changed, the atmosphere changed. November was so important for momentum. I have to say, you know, in relation to even the game against Belgium, you have to give Stephen Kenny great credit for the substitutions that he did make, because Will Keane and Alan Brown had a huge effect on the game, and that's why I think Alan Brown can expect to see, you know, a decent amount of game time this evening, to be sprung from the bench and score a goal. That's a kind of a manager's dream, isn't it? That's a great narrative to have. And there's a more of a confidence about Stephen Kenny now, and, you know, even the confidence to allow Keith Andrews to do the media yesterday, I thought that was really significant, because perhaps that might have sent the wrong signal before, and I think there was a concern that maybe people might read the room wrong. A lot of people were reading stuff into the Republic of Ireland camp with all that was going on, including the COVID crisis, including the Wembley Gate situation, including losing key members of staff. They were looking into it and maybe reading more into it than there should have been. But I sense a more confident Stephen Kenny now, even to the point where in his programme notes this evening, you'll both remember that his programme notes when Dundalk manager, and before that with Bohemians and Derry, were always really interesting. And tonight he says, and there's a new programme tonight, by the way, there was a super programme for the centenary game on Saturday, a brand new programme tonight, so credit due to all the people who worked on that as well. But Stephen Kenny says, the values and identity of the team are becoming more evident. We have a clearly defined way of playing, defined style of play. We play a style that encourages the players to show the full extent of their talents. It's a way of playing that the players enjoy and look forward to playing, and supporters look forward to seeing. The sense of national pride within the team, within the overall squad, is really evident, and the pride the players feel while wearing the Irish jersey reflects the 100 years that all the great players have worn with distinction. So that's the old Stephen Kenny. That's Stephen Kenny writing his own programme notes, saying what he feels. I guess that's the sort of message he probably was trying to get across all those months ago at Wembley Stadium. And I think there's a confidence in him now and in his staff, and I think absolutely the players have bought into it. But as I say, coming back to that M word, the momentum word, it's so crucial in sport. And, you know, the narrative could change very quickly as well. If we fail, you know, a result is a draw, I guess, but if we fail to win tonight and probably win well, there'll be some, you know, certain misgivings again. So it's really important, as I say, to continue that momentum and that positivity.
Yeah, certainly. Stephen Kenny's always been honest, and we talk about the freedom he's giving to his players. Perhaps he's being afforded more freedom now to be open and honest and to be himself, because he has been giving very open interviews as well. Tony, I do have to ask, on a personal level, I know there was a headline during the week, I think John Egan commented on it, that it was Ireland 2, Belgium 2, but it was also Cork 2, Belgium 2. I say you got a bit of joy out of that.
I did, of course, yeah. And you can never have too many Corkmen in a Republic of Ireland squad or a Republic of Ireland team, that's for sure. And Chidozie Ogbeni, although born in Nigeria, he actually really embodies, you know, what us Cork people like to think is the spirit of Cork. He's really competitive. He's a super character. He really is. I.e., all Cork people are super characters.
I've spent so many GAA interviews trying to ask John Myler or Jimmy Barry or whoever, trying to define what Corkness is.
Yeah, Corkness. Yeah, that's what we're trying to get back down to Parky Queeve and Parky Ring. Yeah, but it is a certain swagger. And, you know, Chidozie is very humble, but he's still also plays with a swagger, a big smile on his face. He's open-hearted, and he's a joyful person and a terrific prospect. And that's why I hope he starts tonight to continue his run. And, you know, he's in the form of his life in international football, and playing under Stephen Kenny seems to really suit him. And for Brownie to come on as well and, you know, weigh in with a goal. And, of course, I expect Caoimhín Kelleher, the other Corkman, to and Conor Howrahan possibly to start as well. So yeah, bring it on.
A wash with Cork players. We'll get a couple of internationals back down at Turner's Cross as well. It'll be good in that regard. Listen, Paul, we mentioned Ogbeni there and Brown, and listen, I know I spoke about it on yesterday's show as well, but the manner of goals, like, it's not a Shane Duffy 95th minute equaliser anymore. It's an overhead from Ogbeni. Yes, okay, it was a header from Brown, but a bullet header as well. It's really well taken. I was reading that it's 25 years since Ireland last played Lithuania. They won 2-1 thanks to a double from Tony Cascarino. John Aldridge, Alan Kernahan and former manager Steve Staunton have also scored against Lithuania, but we're hoping again for probably a few new names on the score sheet as well. Perhaps Ogbeni, perhaps Brown again, but it's nice to see the variety in Ireland's play and in our attacking styles, and we're reaping the rewards now.
Yeah, absolutely, Shane. I think that's been evident not just in the weekend gone by, but in previous fixtures, that we're using the ball a lot better. We're getting the likes of Matt Doherty and McLean, or whether that be Enda Stevens, our wing backs into much higher positions and joining into attacks and looking to feed the likes of Ogbeni, Robinson or Knight, whoever that might be on the evening. So You talk about freedom. You can only play freely if you're confident, and you can see that there's confidence oozing in the likes of Ogbeni, and Stephen Kenny has this knack of getting the most out of players. And if you look back at his Dundalk teams, the likes of a Michael Duffy, the likes of a Pat Hoob and a Daryl Horgan, they've always thrived under Stephen Kenny. And you can see Ogbeni and Robinson are two players that seem to be emulating what Stephen Kenny has done down through the years. The reason I say I wouldn't change too many players is just to create that, you know, momentum, we keep talking about it, but also the relationships between players, understanding when maybe Robinson goes short that Ogbeni's coming in behind, and people understanding each other's games. And if you look at the likes of, just take for example an Alan Brown, I think he'd be great off the bench. I think in a game like tonight we're going to own a lot of the ball. I'm not sure that's his strongest facet to his game. I think keeping the likes of Cullen, I think Jeff Hendrick has been revolutionised under Kenny in the last couple of games. Don't take him out, leave him in there, let them use the ball, let them feed the players in front, and let the players in the final third go create, get Matt Doherty, James McLean into wide areas, cross the ball, pick up seconds and keep Lithuania penned in. So I just think with such a feel good factor, with so much positive vibes coming from not just the team as a whole, from certain individuals, I think there'll be players who will want to play tonight, who will want to stay in the team, and for that reason I wouldn't change too many players and just continue what we have going well.
Tony, I'll come to you in a few moments. I'll let you gather your thoughts for the same question I'm going to pose to you, but Paul, I'll put you on the spot first. We should win, we're expecting to win. When it's all said and done, what will the scoreline be?
We've often backed up good performances with poor performance, and I think that's the main thing that you want to avoid tonight. If we play well, I think we'll win 2-0 or 3-0. I'd like to see a clean sheet as well. You know, that's been the foundation of much of our success in previous years, so I'll go for 2-0 or 3-0, Shane.
Okay, very positive. And yes, a lot has been made about our defensive solidity, and hopefully it is a clean sheet for Cork's Caoimhín Kelleher. Tony O'Donoghue, same question to yourself, I suppose. When it's all said and done, and there is so much positivity, and it's all very nice saying that now, but how do you envisage this one going?
Well, first of all, I've got the team for you, so we'll start with that, shall we? We've got the four Cork players in it. Caoimhín Kelleher is in goal. Dara O'Shea returns in the centre-half positions, right side centre-back, I imagine. Nathan Collins, probably the central centre-half, and John Egan. And I think Egan will be, in fact, Egan is the captain this evening, replacing Seamus Coleman. The wing-backs then, Doherty will play right wing-back, and Manning left wing-back. Alan Brown starts in midfield. Conor Howrahan starts in midfield as well. And three up front. Ogbeni will probably play off the right. Robinson play off the left. Stephen Kenny suggested that was probably one of his better positions. And Will Keane. So, yeah, you were making the point. Will Keane has been kind of gradually introduced. He came on as a sub, but it'll be a different approach for us, possibly someone who can hold it up and link the play as well. So an interesting Ireland team, and along expected lines, we have some changes. As I say, O'Shea and Collins in, Howran in, Brown from the start, Keane from the start, and Ryan Manning from the start. So, that mixes it up, but it should be enough to beat Lithuania. There was over 35,000 tickets sold for tonight the last time I checked. There was a super atmosphere on Saturday, and you'd like to think that the crowd, who played a big part on Saturday, can get behind the team again. It's funny that look out over the green sward of Lansdowne Road now, and Stephen Kenny is all alone with his thoughts in the centre circle, looking at his phone. Maybe he's looking at the team as well, although he picked it.
Yeah, well, he might have been listening to you, Tony. Listen, I believe you're a busy man. We're one RTE here, so you've got many duties to fulfil tonight. But listen, thanks so much for checking in with the team news, and the very best of luck to Cork tonight. Sorry, the very best of luck to Ireland tonight. Thank you very much, Tony.
Cheers.
So there the thoughts of Tony O'Donoghue down in the Aviva Stadium. That is the team news ahead of this evening's match with Lithuania. That kicks off at 7:45. Paul, just before we do take a quick ad break, it is still 1-0 to Ireland over in Sweden in the under-21s match. There are 20 minutes left to play. Ireland still on top?
Probably just not hanging in there, but happy enough to protect what we have. And I guess there hasn't been too much to report back on, Shane, which is probably good news given the fact that we're leading 1-0. So Sweden look as if they're kind of getting a bit frustrated. Ireland have maybe just prevented them from creating too many chances. So if it's a quiet finish of the game, we'll be happy one for us.
Yeah, no news is good news. Okay, our football chat continues after the break. We'll be welcoming Mark Langdon into the conversation as we continue Ireland preview and indeed look at the playoffs that are tonight as well.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on
football.
Hey, you're very welcome back to Game on this Tuesday evening. A very football-heavy Game On. We will be getting the latest from the Irish Rugby Camp. We'll hear from Niamh Briggs a little bit later on, and Greg Allen will be in studio chatting golf. But Paul Corry is live in studio, and I'm delighted to say Mark Langdon, the editor of the Racing Post, the football editor, I should say, of the Racing Post, joins us now. Paul Corry is keeping an eye on the Ireland under-21s match. It's currently live on RT2 television. Ireland are leading by 1-0. It is in the 74th minute, just as the clock ticks over there. Ross Tierney with a first half goal, a very well taken goal as well, a finish in the box. So positivity for Ireland, and hopefully more positivity for Ireland a little bit later on down Lansdowne Road. But Mark, Ireland isn't the only show in town. We do have the small matter of a couple of World Cup playoffs, starting with, on my notes already, I nearly had scribbled Portugal v Italy, but it's not. It's Portugal v North Macedonia. North Macedonia, 67th in the world. Never been to a World Cup. Portugal are 8th and last missed out on qualification in 1998. I think from a neutral perspective, we always want the underdog to do well. I know we all want Cristiano Ronaldo at a World Cup as well, but hopefully it's a competitive fixture this evening.
Yeah, I think it will be competitive. I mean, North Macedonia showed exactly that. Yeah, against Italy last week when they were battered really for large parts of the game. Italy had more than enough chances to win it, but North Macedonia refused to give up. They stayed compact, they were well organised, all the things that you kind of expect from an underdog. And then in the last minute, a long range shot beat Donnarumma, and of course that saw them through to this game. They're not complete novices. We saw them at the European Championship, and they are clearly an improving nation, one that's sort of got the appetite for beating sort of the giants, if you like. They've beaten Germany, they've beaten Italy as well in the last couple of years. So Portugal need to, I think, be wary of North Macedonia. You'd definitely rather play them than Italy. But I think, you saw when Ireland played against Portugal, they don't actually enjoy being the favourites in games. They're a team primarily that likes to play on the counter-attack and doesn't want to force the issue. And there have been a number of times in recent years that they've really struggled to beat the kind of opponents that you would imagine with a team or a squad that's got João Félix and Cristiano Ronaldo and Jota, Bernardo Silva. It's absolutely stacked in the final third, but for whatever reason, they nearly always struggle. So I expect Portugal to win, but don't be amazed if it gets a little bit nervy at times in Porto tonight.
Well, one man that doesn't expect Portugal to win is Macedonian captain Stefan Ristovski, who commented after their victory against Italy. He said, "Can we beat Portugal? Yes, we will win. We will do everything to win and we will do it." So you got to love that confidence. And you mentioned Portugal and Turkey there, Mark. I mean, they didn't have it all their own way. If you look at the scoreline, you think it was a handy victory. Yes, in the first half, there was a 2-0 lead. Burak Yilmaz pulled one back and could have levelled it, but missed a penalty before Portugal got their third goal in the 94th minute. So, I mean, from a neutral perspective as well, I know Leonardo Bonucci was, I think, giving out in the media today about these one-off matches being unfair, and you have teams losing four or five matches in a group and still making it to the World Cup, and you lose on 90 minutes of football and you're not making a World Cup. Perhaps some sour grapes there. But from a neutral perspective, having these one-off, one-legged ties, I mean, it's brilliant.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I really enjoy them. It's not the same all over. I mean, in Africa, we've got sort of two-legged playoffs, but home advantage tends to be worth a lot in African football. So I think that maybe, would be potentially slightly unfair. In Europe, I don't think that the advantage is big enough to worry about that. They've produced dramatic games so far. You know, that Portugal game, as you mentioned there, you know, with Yilmaz blazing a penalty high over the bar. It was virtually his last kick in international football. He retired from international football straight after that in tears. Italy going out. Sweden got a very dramatic victory against the Czech Republic that sets up a game against Poland for them that, you know, Poland probably just narrow favourites, but you wouldn't be surprised if Sweden managed to win that game. So no, I think the format is absolutely spot on. And as far as Bonucci is concerned, I mean, that really is sour grapes, because Italy had their chances. They couldn't beat Switzerland, they couldn't beat Northern Ireland, they couldn't beat Bulgaria, and they couldn't beat North Macedonia. So if you can't win any of those games, do you deserve to be at a World Cup? I think you could argue that you've had enough opportunities and you've blown them all.
Yeah, that's an absolutely fair point. And Paul, looking at the starting Portugal team, I mean, you go down through the names, Joe Cancelo, Otavio, João Mentinho, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, Diogo Jota, Cristiano Ronaldo. So, you know, they're certainly going to be going into it heavy favourites, but it remains to be seen how that one will play out. Mark mentioned Poland, Sweden there as well. Poland, of course, given a bye following Russia's disqualification from the competition. They have home advantage this evening, but they have lost their last six games against Sweden. Sweden were taken to extra time by the Czech Republic in their playoff semi-final before Robin Quaison scored the decisive goal in the 110th minute. Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Emil Kraft both return for Sweden following bans. So there's plenty to look forward to. I know you're heading off to the Aviva Stadium, so you mightn't catch any of the action, but some big names and some big games.
Yeah, big names in that Portugal squad, and listen, they'll be looking to continue on from the good result against Turkey last week. It's just when you look at the attacking players that they have, the fact that they have João Félix on the bench tells you everything that you need to know, Shane. You've got Bruno Fernandes, Ronaldo, Jota, Silva, even João Moutinho anchoring the midfield. They've got quality littered throughout their squad. I guess what Mark has touched on there is you don't want the nerves, I guess, seeping in, or you're really, from a Portugal point of view, you want to create chances and score an early goal. And you imagine if they were to do that, that would be a very uphill battle for North Macedonia, simply because if Portugal score once, you would fancy them to score again. And who better to step up in a big occasion than Cristiano Ronaldo? And I'd fully expect them to go through. I think they're too good a side not to. Could have said that about Italy the other night, but I find it hard to see North Macedonia doing that twice within the week. I think the other fixture is really interesting, Shane, when you look at Poland and Sweden. Poland have been very successful in recent times in actually qualifying for major tournaments, and then when they get there, they seem to constantly disappoint. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on. Obviously, Premier League interest with Matty Cash is actually starting right wing back, which is a bit of an interesting one. I think that's only his third or fourth cap for Poland, and you always fancy them when they've got Lewandowski at the top end of the pitch, and similar to Ronaldo in that mould, he seems to produce in the big occasions. And I would fancy Poland to go through there home advantage, obviously playing in their favour too. So I like the format. I think the one-legged affair lends itself to a really open game, and who's to say that we won't see a shock or a disappointment along the way. But certainly from looking at the teams on paper, I would fancy Portugal and Poland to go through.
Okay, Mark did mention that, of course, the African qualifications are two-legged. I suppose the standout one there is Senegal v Egypt. Egypt were one up after the first leg, but Senegal are currently leading at 1-0, so it's 1-1 on aggregate. They are, of course, facing off for the third time in 2 months. Senegal came out on top, I should say, in the African Cup of Nations final at the start of February. But Egypt have the advantage, had the advantage in this tie, I should say, following their 1-0 win in Cairo. So 1-1 at the moment there. But Mark, I do want to come to you. We should be chatting about three European matches this evening, but unfortunately there's only two. Gareth Bale inspired Wales to victory, and they will face Scotland or the Ukraine on a date, well, TBC, as we all know. Scotland manager Steve Clark did mention that it's not just about the fixture, it's the fact that they need to get together, have a training camp and get all their players on the pitch with a proper period of time to prepare for such an important game. Clark has acknowledged that a further postponement of the fixture to the next international window in August, September, just months before the World Cup is due to begin in Qatar, could be required. So I suppose we're stepping into uncharted territory here, and it will be very interesting to see, and a lot of headaches for UEFA and, you know, for Wales and Scotland as well, not knowing what will happen for this match against Ukraine.
Yeah, I think, first of all, just from the Welsh point of view, I mean, that some of their players looked absolutely sort of shattered after winning that game on Thursday night. Would Gareth Bale have been able to have turned up again, you know, in the same form and fitness just a few days later? So, you know, maybe Rob Page will be thinking, you know, he doesn't really care when that game is, but as long as Bale and Ramsey are fit, he'll fancy his chances. But it is a headache because, of course, the draw is taking place on Friday for the World Cup finals. There'll be a number of either-ors in there. Of course, that European final you mentioned, there's also some other intercontinental playoffs in Asia and CONCACAF and also CONMEBOL that are still to be sorted. I think that, you know, Scotland have been very, I think, sporting in their attitude to this game. And it's great to see that, you know, they completely understand the bigger picture and the world issues facing Ukraine at the moment, and have kind of just left it up to, you know, Ukraine really to tell them when they're ready, you know, to play that game. Of course, we know it needs to be played at some stage before the World Cup finals, but don't be surprised, really, if it does go to those autumn internationals, which would be a headache for everybody, really. And you, if you think of, you know, what an event it usually is for the supporters going to these finals, there probably won't be as many in Qatar as what there would be if it was, say, I don't know, in Germany or France. But, you know, if you can't even plan your trip until a month, 2 months before, that is going to cause a lot of issues, really, for, you know, let's say it's Scotland that qualify the Tartan Army. If you don't know you're going until sort of 2 months before, there's already going to be many logistical issues, really, just in terms of the size of the country and hotels and stuff like that. So it's not ideal, but of course, you know, FIFA understand that it's not the biggest issue facing Ukraine, and COVID has caused even more problems. So, you know, they're still backing up in some countries. You know, if you look at the sort of CONCACAF region, they've not finished qualifying. That's the sort of overnight tomorrow that will finish, and then they've still got some playoffs. The teams in Asia, Australia, have got to play against UAE in a game before they then play potentially in an intercontinental playoff in June. So it's not often that we get to this situation where there's going to be so many either-ors in Friday's draw, but a combination of the events in Ukraine and also COVID from sort of, you know, the last couple of years has made this unprecedented, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We are keeping an eye on the under-21s here. Well, Paul Corry is keeping an eye on the Ireland under-21s. It is still 1-0 to Ireland in Sweden as we approach the last 5 minutes. Mark, you mentioned a team that, you mentioned teams that are still to qualify, but one team who thought they qualified was the USA national team, who celebrated qualifying for the Qatar World Cup after their win against Panama on Sunday, despite not yet securing qualification. A 5-1 win against Panama, including a hat-trick from Christian Pulisic, has taken the US to the brink of qualification, but a mistake was made by their players and staff. At the full-time whistle, the entire squad joined together to hold a banner that read qualified as they celebrated with fans in Orlando, Florida, but it was pointed out that there is still one game to play to absolutely make sure they appear at the World Cup against they're playing Costa Rica on Wednesday. So some bizarre stuff there. But yet, Mark, now forgive me if I'm putting you on the spot here, that isn't the most bizarre story coming out of North American football, because Canada qualified for the World Cup for the first time since 1986, and perhaps they're putting it down to a certain off-field lucky charm.
Yeah, it's a lucky omen. Yeah, they take a sword with them that's supposed to be lucky. They actually weren't allowed to take it for a recent away game because it wasn't allowed through customs. And you know, it's working because they haven't been to a World Cup since 1986. You mentioned those celebrations in Orlando, those premature ones. Well, there were wild celebrations in Canada when they, with the help of their sword, managed to seal qualification. Got some very, I suppose, interesting younger players. Jonathan David plays for Lille, will probably get a move in the summer to a bigger club. Alfonso Davies, who was injured for that victory against Jamaica, plays for Bayern Munich, a fantastic player for Canada. They've invested a lot in youth football. Of course, we'll be hosting future World Cup alongside Mexico and USA. So they're probably thinking more, I would say, about 4 years' time. But, you can never... you can't plan for these World Cups. You know, you take them when you get them. I'm not sure if they're allowed to take the sword with them to Qatar. But if they can, they certainly will.
Yeah, well, manager John Herdman is very confident that they can. He said the sword is something that symbolises new Canada. Herdman explained after Sunday's 4-0 win over Jamaica that indeed secured the Canadian men's first trip to the World Cup since Mexico 86. Herdman was quoted saying, "I said to these boys that we've always had a shield, but we created a sword, and on the sword it says fear nothing in Latin, though." And I'm going to try pronounce what the Latin is for fear nothing. And that's new Canada. That's the swagger we want to play with. And goes into every stadium to symbolise we'll own their ground and be new Canada. So some interesting thoughts there from John Herdman, and we wish Canada all the best, and we'll be interested to see how it goes in the World Cup. We are approaching full time in the under 21s match. Ross Tierney has been confirmed as the RTE man of the match. It is still 1-0 thanks to a first half Ross Tierney goal coming up to the 88th minute there. Paul Carey is just watching that as Paul Carey, Ireland bear down on goal, and it's 2-0.
Yeah, it is. It looks like Tyreek Wright. It was just a bit of a hopeful ball forward, and it was JJ Keogh. He's flicked it on. Tyreek Wright latched onto it. His first effort was saved by the goalkeeper. He's followed up and he's finished it off. So this is a huge result chain for us. Absolutely massive. To go away from home. Stephen Kenny did it when he was under 21's manager. Went to Sweden and won. And it looks like Jim Crawford's side have won it here too. So puts us in pole position for that playoff spot. But a massive result to go away from home and get 3 points.
Absolutely, yeah, it is. Tyreek Wright, number 18. What? That's good timing. That is good timing. So we'll see how much injury time is to come. Paul, you'll be keeping an eye on that. It was a long ball down from Brian Maher.
Yeah, I know Ross Tierney's been given man of the match, but Brian Maher was absolutely excellent. Everything he did, coming out and commanding his penalty area, the organisation of the back five, they've defended superbly well, and they deserve a bit of luck because they've restricted Sweden. You know, going ahead in the 12th minute isn't easy to see out the rest of the game, but they've hardly coughed up any chances. So a really professional performance, and it's great to see, you know, the two subs coming off the bench, Coyote flicking it on and Tyreek Rice with the finish. So maybe not the prettiest of performances, but a very professional one.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, we'll check in there. We'll see how much injury time is to come. Mark, just before I do let you go, just very briefly, just one final question on the Women's Champions League, because Barcelona hold a 3-1 lead in their quarterfinal tie against Real Madrid, but they are hoping to break the world record attendance for a women's sporting event at the Camp Nou tomorrow evening.
Yeah, that's right. They're hoping to get in excess of 80,000 supporters there. Of course, you know, you think Barcelona and Real Madrid, and you think it would be quite a tight, close game. But in the women's arena, Barcelona are way better, not only than Real Madrid. They're the best team in Europe and on a phenomenal sort of winning run. And so, yeah, that the fans are coming out in force. I mean, it could be a really momentous occasion, you know, if they could get, you know, nearly a full Nou Camp to watch a women's match. I think that would send, you know, absolutely the right signals forward for the sport, and you know, obviously for Barcelona as well, because they're a very you know, attractive team to watch. Got a lot of quality in there. That they should be able to beat Real Madrid quite convincingly, and I'm sure that'll add a few to the gate as well. The possibility of giving, you know, Real Madrid a real good hiding.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the record at the moment is 80,203 spectators at the 2012 Olympic final between the United States and Japan at Wembley. So hopefully that record is smashed. And the winners, interestingly, of Barcelona and Real Madrid that we expect to be Barcelona will take on the winners of Arsenal versus Wolfsburg, who will meet on Thursday. That tie is evenly poised at 1-1 after a late Arsenal equaliser. And of course, there is a big Irish interest in the form of Arsenal's Katie McCabe, as Arsenal are looking for the domestic and indeed the treble in the women's game there. Mark Langdon, thank you very much for keeping us up to date on all things football as we keep an eye on the Ireland under 21 match. As I lose my train of thought by trying to keep an eye on the television, Paul, there are 5 minutes of injury time. We are into the 92nd minute, but things still looking good for Jim Crawford and Ireland, 2-0 up at the moment.
Yeah, Sweden look kind of out of ideas here, Shane, and you know, Ireland have restricted them. There was a bit of a half chance there, but defended really well, being very, very professional in the performance. And, you know, I was getting a bit excited when the second goal went in there, but it really does put us in a good position. The remaining fixtures are all in June. We play Bosnia at home, Montenegro at home, and if we pick up 6 points there, we'll all but sure to pick up that last playoff spot in order to try get ourselves qualified for our first under-21s tournament. So a huge result, still a lot to do within the group, but, you know, some really strong performance. I thought Coventry and Kilkenny were really professional in the middle of the pitch, and the three centre halves, McGuinness, the other two, McEntee and O'Brien, have defended really well. So yeah, really professional performance. I think Jim Crawford will be absolutely delighted with what he's gotten out of his side, and a really, really solid team performance.
Absolutely. 3 minutes to go in that one. We're going to take a quick break. Still to come, we'll hear from Niamh Briggs in the Irish Rugby Camp, and we'll have Greg Allen chatting golf. Paul, you're going to stick around. We're not letting you go to the Aviva Stadium just yet, because we're going to get a full time roundup from that 21s match. Stay with us.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On this Tuesday evening. As the full-time whistle has just gone in Sweden, it finishes Sweden 0, the Republic of Ireland 2. Paul Corrie was keeping an eye on that one. A comprehensive 2-0 victory?
I think it was probably more professional, Shane, than it was comprehensive. A good, solid performance from Jim Crawford's sides. Goals from Ross Tierney and Tyreek Wright. Probably two different types of goals. One in the first half was worked well down the right-hand side. Good reactionary strike then from Tierney as he came onto the ball. The second one just hitting Sweden on the counter-attack after defending well in the second half. So it puts us in a prime position. It leaves us 1 point behind Sweden with a game in hand. Should we win that, we'll go into second position, and second position will get you that playoff spot that would hopefully get us one game away from an under-21s tournament. So a massive result. The 6 points against Sweden have proved pivotal, and leaves us in the driving seat.
Happy days. Well, plenty of positivity in Sweden, and hopefully plenty of positivity in South Dublin a little bit later on. So a 2-0 victory for the under-21s, and of course Ireland will be taking on Lithuania at the Aviva Stadium this evening. Paul Corrie, you are free to go. Enjoy yourself and enjoy the Aviva Stadium. Thank you so much for your company.
Game on.
Golf.
So we turn our attention to golf now, and I'm delighted to say RT Sports' Greg Allen joins me. And Greg, I suppose only one place to start. There is a new number one golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler, a 25-year-old New Jersey native. Who is this man?
Well, he was the world number 24 last October. At the Ryder Cup, where he was a captain's pick on that very impressive winning team of Steve Stricker's, he was the 14th ranked American in the world that week, and he was last man on the team. He was the lowest ranked player in the world. So where has he come from? He was a very good amateur, turned pro, got his PGA Tour card in 2019, was Rookie of the Year in the PGA Tour in 2020, and then just began playing very solidly, very consistently, very well in the majors as well. Four top tens in the six majors that he's played in, and never outside of the top 20. So there's a bit of a spark of, you know, someone who's not daunted by the big occasion about him. But really, it's the last, you know, 3 months. Won in Phoenix, which is a big tournament in terms of world ranking points. And then he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational in Florida. And obviously, he's won the World Match Play. And it's an element of the degree to which Colin Morikawa and John Rahm have come off the boil in the back of last year. He's come with a run. We're not even into the majors season, and we've got a world number one whose name is not familiar, but he's a very good player. And who knows, you know, because of his record in the majors, which has to be respected, four top tens and six starts, you have to think that, you know, he's going to turn up at Augusta and be a serious player. And he will be, because he has a very good all-round game, hits it far enough. I think he's around 20th in distance in the PGA Tour. He's a very good caddy in the bag, former Bubba Watson caddy, a guy called Ted Scott. That seems to have made a big difference. And Scotty Scheffler is a 25-year-old who's learning how to win, having added that to the consistency that he had. And being able to win, get across the line three times in 6 weeks, that's got to be respected.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how he gets on at the Masters. You are, of course, going over to the Masters yourself, Greg. And one man that will be there representing Ireland is Seamus Power.
Yeah, Seamus finally made it. And he made it. He ran through the finishing line. You know, he's world number 41 now. So he was on the brink of falling outside of the top 50 going into last week at 48 in the world. If he had a bad campaign in the World Match Play, he wouldn't have made it to the Masters, more than likely. But he did. He had three wins, one of them against the world number 4, Patrick Cantlay, one of them against the world number 16 at the time, Tyrrell Hatton. And you have to respect the fact that Seamus Power doesn't really care about people's reputations. He has the golf game to go with what we know is a winning capability, because he won on the PGA Tour last year in the Barbasol Championship. It's hard to remember, because it's such only a year ago, he was 463 in the world. And now he's number 41 in the world. Last year on the PGA Tour, he was the highest jumper in the world rankings on the PGA Tour. This guy from Waterford, 35 years of age, a mature golfer, not by any means an old golfer, but a man in the middle of his career, has found the form which has taken him to the territory of going to his first Masters, his first major as well. And I really like the cut of his game. He just looks like someone who plays the type of game that will do very well in major championships. There's not many. He does go off form at times. We saw that after setting 15 under par at halfway in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am and then not figuring really over the weekend, finishing tied for ninth. But when he's hot, he putts beautifully, drives it really well. So he's long off the tee, good putter. You got to like what he's doing. You know, he's a player, as they say.
Absolutely. Well, it will be interesting to see how Seamus gets on, and indeed the new world number one, Scotty Scheffler. You're heading over to Augusta, Greg. I'm very jealous, but we will be checking in with you plenty from April 7th onwards. So enjoy yourself. And unfortunately, that is all we have time for on Game On this evening. Marie will be back at the same time tomorrow, but do stay tuned, because Tara Kumar is up next.
RTE 2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.